Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
This show's audio was via a Skype call.
Get fired up for Spirit Fire Radio with your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer. Get ready to shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in these modern times. Bring purpose to your life through practical spirituality and add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. Now, here are your hosts, Dorothy Riddle and Steve Kramer.
Hello, listeners. Welcome to Spirit Fire Radio. My name is Steve Kramer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Dr. Dorothy Riddle. Hi, Dorothy.
Hi, Steve. Glad to be here.
Great to be continuing our discussion on non-duality. This whole season of Spirit Fire Radio, we're talking about universal principles and ways in which we can harness the power of these tools, these principles that define how we move in the world. They actually create the world we move in, if we might say so, right, Dorothy?
Absolutely.
So this month, we're talking about non-duality. The last couple of weeks, we talked about divisiveness that comes as a result of living a life that appears or living our lives as a duality as a principle. We talked about bigotry in week two, and we talked about stereotypes and objectification in week three. So this week, we're going to talk about ways to move beyond duality. How do we approach the world as non-dual, as everything being interconnected, interdependent? Dorothy, do you have a quote for us?
Yes, I do. And actually, I'd like to just add to the title of this week, Moving Beyond the Illusion of Duality.
Uh-oh.
So we remember that it's an illusion. I think there's this poem, I'm sure people are very familiar with it, but to me it's so relevant to what we're going to be talking about today. First they came for the communists, and I didn't speak out because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the trade unionists, but I didn't speak out because I wasn't a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I didn't speak out because I wasn't a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. And that, to me, just typifies the kind of world that we create when we buy into the illusion of duality. And you know, Steve, if we think about the principles that we've been looking at over the last couple of months, they're so related to this whole concept of non-duality. The first one, interconnectivity, you know, we are all part of one huge cosmic energy field. We're not divided up into, you know, A, field A and field B. It's all one. And then secondly, we create our own reality. You know, energy follows thought. That was the principle of participation. So we can choose each moment of the day whether we reinforce that illusion of duality or whether we live our true nature, which is as interconnected.
Yeah, it is. It feels so limited, right, to think of duality. I love that even just the sound of the word dual, to have a dual, although it's there are dual parts in a dual. This idea of this or that, as opposed to it all being a part of one field that we are all constantly co-creating, and that we don't compare, but we actually collaborate, right? It mm-hmm. just, you can sense when you think about duality, about the this or that, that wonder and curiosity, that it's not so expansive. Whereas when we think about non-duality, it's like the totality of the world, and we are just a part of that, observing, participating, a part of it, as opposed to being separate from it and commenting on it, actually, right? Or putting mm-hmm. it in its place. Yeah.
So, you know, I really like that, you know, that emphasis on non-duality as expansive, you know, and it invites us to, again, think about, you know, who are we? How do we exist in relation to the rest of the universe? What is our connection? And you've talked before, Steve, about the fractal nature of awareness. Maybe you could expand on that. I think that's very relevant right now.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, because we need to experience that interconnectivity. You know, we talked last week about really seeing another person and looking them in the eyes to participate with them, to engage. That the only way we're going to solve this problem of division is to get to know each other on a human level, to meet each other, to face each other, to get involved, you know, to actually see our similarities. But there's also this way, you know, in teaching meditation, we're often talking about awareness and about the observer and what happens when we actually experience interconnectivity on an energy level. And we can do that with our minds. We'll often ask people, you know, in a group, we'll you know, become meditative, become aware and say, you know, are you aware? And have somebody ponder that. And often they're aware of what their senses are picking up. They're aware of the room. They're aware of sounds. They're aware of the temperature of the room on their skin. But then we say, now ponder, are you aware that you are aware? And something very magical happens. We move our mind to this level of the observer, and we become aware of the very fact that we are aware. And what happens is we're then sort of connected to this omnipresent field of consciousness. Because so, you know, the science or the materialist point of view was that consciousness is the product of the gray matter of our brain, that without a brain, we're not conscious. But actually, you know, that's just an idea. I mean, it's certainly not proven by any stretch, but that consciousness is a field and that our brain or aspects of our brain and aspects of our mind can tap into that field. So as we become aware that we're aware, we become a part of that field of consciousness and we sense that interconnectivity. Often here at Spirit Fire, you know, people will say, oh, I have a meditation practice. So many people follow online meditations and they'll do that guided meditations with an app or meditate on their own. But wow, when they come to a retreat center or a meditation center and they meditate in a group, they experience that field that is consciousness. They connect with another on a different level and something quite special happens and they sort of experience the nature of non-duality. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Well, and for myself, you know, if I think about trying to make it practical, how do I reinforce, you know, or recognize that interconnection as much as possible. So, you know, I can do that as I'm going through my life, as I'm looking out at the trees and the bay that I look at out my window, and I can feel into the energetic connection there. I also, as I go through my life and I meet different people or I see them on the news, one of the exercises that I give myself is to see if I can identify at least one thing that I have in common with the other person. So instead of looking at differences, what are the commonalities? Because the differences often stand out very strongly. Is the other person a parent? Is the other person dealing with some form of disability like I am? Is the other person engaged in community activities that I share an interest in, or in a sport that I'm also interested in? Or you see what I'm getting at, Steve?
Totally. And We've got to
look for bridges. We've got to look for ways in which we're similar, because I know there will come times when we're tested in terms of, you know, whether we can work with this person, whether we can have a dialogue with this person around a difficult issue. And if I have already established some sense of commonality, some sense of trust, I've already clearly communicated respect to the other person, they are more likely to listen when I'm trying to have a dialogue with them about something that is more challenging, you know, more intense, more emotionally charged than if I've just completely ignored them and now all of a sudden I want them to pay attention to this.
Or dismiss them or label them very quickly and then moved on, put them in a box.
Yes.
And say, okay, I can move away. And Dorothy, I love that sort of practical exercise because you can feel into this engagement with the other person, that this momentum mm-hmm. that you're creating, even energetically, of expansiveness, that you're curious about them. You know, it's this mm-hmm. idea of moving into this sea of discovery, just like looking at the bay out your window, looking at another human being with a sense of curiosity. There's something quite beautiful about that. You can sense that there's sort of like your experience unfolds. It's so limiting to label someone and move away. It just doesn't even sound like a fun experience. But to search for ways in which you are similar and to you are engaging them, you are being curious. That's, you know, I think a sense of wonder and a sense of curiosity will always lead to a sense of appreciation because we are uncovering, you know, the experience is efflorescing. I love that word. It's sort of mm-hmm. unfolding and flowering. And that I think is a way to directly experience the non-dualistic nature of our reality. And we do that with our emotions too, I find. You know, I'm feeling sad. And we'll just label it and then live with it. Well, why am I feeling sad? What is sadness revealing to me? You know, it's very similar as saying, oh, you know, that person is you know, that person is no good. Or just judging someone, you know, as we've said in a stereotypical way. It's limiting. It doesn't allow for us to learn anything. It doesn't allow for our experience to expand. And it, quite frankly, keeps us removed from the sea of consciousness, I would say, you know, in a very mm-hmm. Sort of esoteric, in a sort of abstract way. It keeps us mm-hmm. in separation.
And we have many ways, unfortunately, in which that separation is reinforced in our lives. So that's why, to me, it has to be a conscious choice, a conscious exercise to experience the world differently, to experience each other differently. And that's the only way in which we're going to shift and actually embrace our reality, which is an interconnected, non-dualistic reality.
And it just comes from just simply connecting to another, right? And even if that is engaging in a process, you were saying, and so much as just learning somebody's name, I just love that simple exercise that you said so like last year about just mm-hmm. approaching, seeing someone with a name tag and saying, hello, Susan. It's just immediately creates a connection and we sense non-dualistic, you know, it's a non-dualistic approach, even though, you know, it's this way to connect. Beautiful. Dorothy, we're at our first break.
Okay.
Listeners, we're going to continue talking about ways to move beyond duality when we return.
Stay juicy. Tune in to Your Juicy Love with me, Una Drake, co-hosting monthly with Dr. Pat, and every second Monday at 12 p.m. on Transformation Talk Radio. My show, Your Juicy Love, helps you find the dynamic, life-affirming love you've always wanted. Transform your relationships and bring peace, joy, and juicy, juicy love to planet Earth. For more information, visit unadrake.com.
Welcome back, listeners, to Spirit Fire Radio. Just want to take a moment to tell you a bit about this collaboration that is Spirit Fire Radio. We mentioned collaboration already on the show, and I think we probably mention it every month, right, Dorothy?
Of course.
Collaboration, they are fundamental principles that work so well in creating a lovely, benevolent universe. So, Dorothy, a bit about the School for Esoteric Studies.
Yes, the School for Esoteric Studies, which I'm involved with, is an educational nonprofit. We provide training, spiritual training, for persons who already have a spiritual practice that they would like to deepen. And we do this through meditation, study, and service. We also have a number of group initiatives that our members and any other persons who would like to join us can enter into, in the way of service meditations and conference topics that we focus on. But one of the initiatives that has been particularly meaningful to us is seeking out other like-minded organizations to collaborate with instead of just doing our own thing. And we have a number of organizations that we now collaborate with. And if you're with an organization that would like to do so, please look on our website at esotericstudies.net for the section on intergroup collaboration. But one of the collaborations that we really treasure is this collaboration with Spirit Fire to create Spirit Fire Radio. So you can learn more about us at esotericstudies.net, and I want to thank Steve for this wonderful collaboration.
Yes, indeed. It bears beautiful fruit. We are very pleased about it as well at Spirit Fire. Spirit Fire is an educational nonprofit as well, focused on bringing consciousness, on generating awareness in people's everyday lives. We do that through an online meditation practice called the Practice of Living Awareness and meditation retreats at Spirit Fire Retreat Center in Western Massachusetts. We also teach online classes, many esoteric subjects. So find out more about Spirit Fire at spiritfire.com. And Spirit Fire Radio, indeed, has been a wonderful experience, and we hope you are enjoying the experience as well as listeners. So, Dorothy, going to continue the conversation about non-duality, about moving beyond duality. At the break, you were talking about an experience that was my comment about saying hello to people by name in the break. It'd be lovely just to share that with our listeners. I loved it.
Sure. So, listeners, if you have listened to a number of our programs, you'll know that from time to time I do mention this practice of asking service people, you know, who are helpful to me or my family, what their name is, so that I can so I can thank them by name if they don't have a name tag or a business card that has their name, so that I know it already. So the other week I was in our local supermarket and I was at the checkout counter, and I always try to thank the person helping me at the checkout counter by name. But this particular person, her name tag was turned over. And so what I did, instead of just asking her what her name was, I said, "You're Rosie, right?" And she looked at me kind of oddly. She said, "No." And she turned her name tag over. She said, "I'm Rita." And I felt really embarrassed. I said, I'm so sorry. To me, it's really impolite to not address people by name. And I should have just asked your name. But I've seen you so frequently, I thought that I remembered it correctly. And I really apologize. Thank you very much, Rita, for your help today." And she laughed, and we just had a very nice little moment of connection. It was actually more of a connection than if I had simply said, "Thank you, Rita." So it was a good reminder to me of that willingness to experiment, to make mistakes, you know, in reaching out to people that can sometimes deepen the connection.
And people respond to openness, right? You know, it's contagious, right? When you mm-hmm. when you share from your heart, people feel it and they connect and they respond. We hope. And if not, you go with the flow, right?
Right.
offer an opportunity and you just roll with it.
That's right. So part of, Steve, part of this, you know, recognizing or experiencing non-duality is recognizing that we are surrounded by many beings and species that are persons in the way in which we define personhood. Not just other humans, but if we're talking about non-duality, then we have to not make a separation between ourselves and animals and plants and all that, because in fact, we have lots of scientific evidence now that there are many mammals that are as social, as intelligent, as self-aware as humans. You know, the cetaceans being one group, the great apes being another, elephants being very, very intelligent, and a good example of a species that is sufficiently different from us that we miss the signs of self-awareness. There was a research article published about, you know, they were trying to measure the self-awareness of an elephant, and they weren't coming up with anything. And then one of the scientists realized that they were using this very small mirror, which is the same size that they had used with other species, but it only showed, you know, like a little part of a leg or the trunk of the elephant. And when they instead used an 8-foot by 8-foot mirror, suddenly the elephant saw itself and was able to indicate that, yes, it was aware that that image was itself. So it's interesting how we can limit our awareness of that. And then, and plants, you know, Switzerland has a whole set of laws about plants and their well-being because of research showing that plants are, again, intelligent, social, aware, self-aware. They just happen to communicate chemically, which is not the mode in which we communicate.
Which is amazing, by the way, right?
Yes.
I mean, to even study plants for a moment is to realize that their agency is so fine-tuned and well beyond that which we are capable of.
Yes. You know,
what's interesting for me is how many people, I am sure, really do not look at the earth. I mean, I think if across humanity, this concept of looking at the planet Earth as a living thing, as a living being, is so abstract.
Yes.
Like, it's actually just hard for them to wrap their brains around. You know, I think it's something we have to really expand our awareness and our consciousness. So I appreciate that we talk about that quite a bit on the show, because it's necessary to engage the earth in that way. And sometimes it's necessary to stretch, you know, the ways you think about it. I think of a list, we didn't get to mention it last week, but Martha Nussbaum, she's done quite a bit in talking about sexual objectification, and we talked about that last week. But there is a list of features that identifying features of sexual objectification. It's interesting if you read through those and think about the ways that we actually objectify the earth by looking at that. You know, one of the, you know, if you treat a person or think about treating the earth as a tool for the objectifier's purposes, goodness, how many ways do we use the earth for our purposes alone? You know, selfish. Mm-hmm. Purposes. Or another feature is treating a person and substitute earth as lacking autonomy or self-determination. Goodness gracious, we all know if human beings were just eliminated from the surface of the earth, it would rebalance itself in a moment, right? And lacking in agency, looking at the earth as interchangeable with other objects, there really is only one earth, as lacking in boundary and integrity, as something that can be owned by another. I mean, just this idea of owning the earth, of owning portions of the earth so that we can do with it as we see fit. You know, it really does show that we objectify the earth in so many ways.
Right. And I think people are startled if when and if they learn things like there's a river in New Zealand that has been granted a legal status of personhood. One of the ironies of our legal system is that we allow corporations to be treated as persons, but not living things other than adult humans, and oftentimes it's only adult male humans. But there's a river, and there's a Maori tribe person designated, and a government a person designated, and they are the two guardians. They act together as the guardians of the interests of the river. And Bolivia has a ministry of Mother Earth, specifically designed to look after the best interests of the earth itself. And if you think about it, Steve, the earth is has an incredible ability to adapt to what we do to it, but only within certain bounds. You know, it manages temperature, it manages the salinity, the saline content of oceans, no matter what trash we put into it. But there come limits. You know, we have the wildfires going on right now. You know, when I hear about various what we think of as natural disasters, I think, you know, what message is it that Mother Earth is trying to get us, send to us? What lesson is it that she is trying to help us learn? Because you're absolutely correct. The Earth can exist just fine without humans.
Yeah.
And we're the ones that need the Earth.
And hopefully she's telling us that we are quite powerful. We are powerful beings, and we, in that we have the capacity to disrupt, you know, the environment in the ways that we can, that we've got the power to reverse it. We are stewards, you know. So hopefully Mother Earth is showing us, you know, hey, look, here's what, see what you're doing. And in that you had the power to create this, you've got the power to undo it. There's been so many articles lately, Dorothy, you know, that have said basically by the late 70s, early 80s, we had to make certain choices and we didn't make them. In fact, we went against them and made things worse, and that perhaps it is impossible to reverse this trend toward environmental collapse. I hope that is not the case. But goodness, time and time again, there's so many scientists saying it's too late. But, you know, I don't know. I think human beings are incredibly, incredibly intelligent. And I also think that we are an extension of the Earth, and that, you know, may it be so that as quickly as we are seeing the destruction and what is appearing to be near collapse, that we will make choices. You know, it comes down to choices and values about sharing this with one another and with the rest of life on Earth. Collaboration and cooperation, right?
Absolutely. But, and I think one of the things that we need to remind ourselves of is it's a partnership, and we are not the only part of the partnership. I mean, we need to hold up our own end, and we need to respect all of the things that the Earth is doing to try to accommodate us. You know, I think of, I mean, for example, the new species of bacteria that developed to eat the oil out of the sand, you know, when there were oil spills. The problem is, you know, we're dumping an awful lot of crises in Earth's lap, so to speak. And so the collapse will come not because the Earth is not flexible and adaptable and intelligent, but because there's just too many piling up.
So getting to know it on a deeper level, right? It's creating reverence and taking the initiative to get to know the Earth as a person deeper. So Dorothy, we're at a break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Did you know that all of the shows on the Transformation Radio Network are available as podcasts to stream or download?
Really?
Check us out. Go to transformationradio.fm. We have business shows, spiritual shows, energy healing shows, and pretty much everything in between. Something for everyone, guaranteed to inspire, educate, and transform. We are transforming the world, one listener at a time.
Living Lighter Radio with Jason and Patricia. We have an ecosystem approach to your life. Tune in weekly every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific on Transformation Talk Radio as we, Jason and Patricia, discuss what's truly holding you back. We offer you the tools you need to reach your goals and at the same time be living lighter. For more information about Living Lighter, visit www.livinglighter.org.
To find answers to life's questions, you need to look within yourself. Dr. Glenna Rice brings your questionable conversations on Transformation Talk Radio each month. Tune in each month for insight into how you can live up to your full potential. Dr. Glenna is a physical therapist, certified Access Consciousness, and Access Body Class facilitator. How does it get any better than this? For more information on Dr. Glenna Rice and her work, visit glennarice.com.
Love Living Radio Ignite Your Whole Being with Emily Perkins is a show for those looking to explore the sparkling magnificence of their inner selves. Tune in every second and fourth Wednesday at 4 p.m. Pacific as Emily sheds a radiant light of love on the beauty and power that resides within you, discussing love in all its forms through conversations that provoke awareness, curiosity, and expansion. Emily shares the unlimited power of love. For more information or to listen to this show, visit lovelivingholistics.com.
Dream on, fly high, and live adventurously on The Laura Meeks Show. Tune in each month on Transformation Talk Radio as host Laura Meeks guides you in finding your unique gifts and bringing them to life. As a certified life coach, speaker, and veteran bomber pilot for the U.S. Air Force, Laura knows how to follow a dream. She is ready to support you so you can dream on, fly high, and live adventurously. For more information on Laura and her work, visit flyhighliving.com.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Welcome back to Spirit of Fire Radio and our conversation on moving beyond duality. So, Dorothy, how can we partake in, we wanted to talk a bit about being non-dualistically politically active because, you know, we've got to be the change we want to see, but how do we go out there and sort of get in it and move beyond it, especially in this, these really what seem to be such divisive times?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is a really important and challenging issue, Steve, because we know, from esoteric teachings that separativeness is the great heresy, the great illusion. And the last thing we want to do is to contribute to that divisiveness, that separativeness in the way in which we are politically active. On the other hand, we can't simply sit idly by and do nothing. So how is it that we intervene? And I think, to me, I wanted to share two things. One is I keep in my mind as a model the organization MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. Mm-hmm. It's not Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. It's against the action. And so I think, you know, separating people's actions and focusing on the actions and not on the, you know, demeaning the individual themselves may be part of the answer. But the other thing I wanted to share was I heard an interview on the radio this past week with the author, Stephen Ross, of a new book that's out called Hitler in Los Angeles, how Jews foiled Nazi plots against Hollywood and America in the 1930s. And this is a part of U.S. history that I actually knew nothing about. But apparently during the 1930s, while the Nazis were coming into power within Germany, they were also making a very concerted move within the United States. The second most powerful Nazi in North America was at the consulate, the German consulate in Los Angeles, and they were really targeting the entertainment industry because that was, at that point in time, there wasn't social media. That was the main communication mechanism for ideas. And they were successful until 1939. They were successful in keeping any of the Hollywood production studios from creating and disseminating negative films about Nazi Germany. So whether it was documentaries, whether it was anything else that would get at the Nazi ideology, they became powerful enough that they could keep those from being made. And the final breakthrough in 1939 was the movie, I believe it was called Confessions of a Nazi Spy, because that was a true life autobiography, and they weren't able to do that. But they were able to get all of the support staff in the various production studios fired and replaced by Aryan Nazi sympathizers. And it was a man, Leon Lewis, that brought this to the attention of the moguls, the people controlling the production studios, who happened to be, I don't know if they were all, but a number of them were Jewish, and pointing out the dynamic that was happening and the importance of pushing back. He himself had already gone to the police, the FBI, various levels of authority. And what he was hearing was nobody was interested in taking any action. There were all of these groups starting up that were very sympathetic to Germany and to the Nazis, and they had no intention of stepping in to stop this. Even when he presented evidence that there were plots to assassinate Roosevelt and overthrow the Roosevelt presidency and take over the United States. So things moved quite a ways along, and Leon Lewis then instead created a network of spies, and this book is a story of them, network of spies. They didn't start out professionally as spies, but to keep track of what was happening and to try to turn that around. This is an incredible parallel to many things that are going on right now in the United States.
That's what I was thinking. I just kept thinking about this idea of the media, and a move you just could almost foresee happening, where media gets shut down all right across the board. You know, it is, the similarities are quite chilling, actually. And you realize much of that is about truth, of bringing light, bringing it to the light. We say that I'm going to bring it into the light, which means revealing the truth. So you think about this idea you just said earlier, that separativeness is the great heresy and it's an illusion. Well, how do we correct illusion? We bring truth to it. We bring clarity to it. So,
and that becomes more challenging in an environment when the national leader keeps talking about fake news
and literally changing stories all the time. I mean, it is bizarre that I'm, Giuliani just did it just recently, where he'll say one thing one week and then completely the opposite the next week and then completely the opposite again. And the idea is to just get you so confused that you've got no idea what truth even looks or feels like. And you can see that it's so intentional. So, I think one goal of being politically active is to really abide by the truth, is to make it of utmost importance to uphold truth, to clear distortions wherever and however you can.
And to have evidence to back it up.
Yeah.
And to be prepared with that. One of the disturbing trends that is coming out in the polls is a portion of the U.S. population is following President Trump in becoming much more positive about Russia as a friend of the U.S. And this is at the same time when the U.S. electoral system and infrastructure grid is under active attack by Russian actors. But because it's not military action, you know, with tanks rolling in the streets and guns going off, people seem to forget that there is an attack going on.
And an illusion is a thought form, and it mm-hmm. and when you present a thought again and again and again, and you present it in such a way, it becomes a belief, and that belief can be completely illusory, but yet it just is repeated enough that it becomes, in someone's mind, a truth. And you know,
I heard a little news clip about discussions that have been going on within the mainstream media, because if the president says X, then there's a kind of responsibility to report that, even if X is false. And so what people are talking about, I haven't seen it actually demonstrated yet, but they're talking about how you need to say the truth, then you say the fake news that's being said by the president or whoever it is, and then you return again to what the actual fact is. So you sandwich the untruth with the truth.
Amazing. And it's amazing that that's what we've come to, Dorothy, right? I mean, it is amazing.
That's right.
So
it has to be a deliberate. It has to be a deliberate tactic.
Yeah. Wow. Well, I think there is also something, Dorothy, to living your truth. You know, to really being an example. We've talked about building bridges. It makes me think of Fred Rogers, of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. You know, that he was, I think of him as a political activist. You know, he did it so quietly and he did it so true to his own form, but he did it so well, you know, in taking on social issues, political issues, but doing it in a way that was, I found, gentle. You know, there was kindness that built bridges. I think of at the time in the country where there was this big thing going on where, I remember there was an instance where there were blacks in a swimming pool with whites, and they put chlorine right into the pool to burn their skin to get everybody out of the pool. And, you know, Mr. Rogers said, hey, he was adamant that the policeman on the show was black. And he did a segment where it was summer, they were hot, he was outside putting his feet in a cool pool, and he invited his friend to put his feet in the pool. And there's this image on TV of these white feet and these black feet in the pool together, and then them drying their feet off together. Just so beautiful. So I find there's small ways.
That's a great image.
And it builds bridges, you know. So I think we can be political in ways that are, you know, a bit subversive by just living our life by understanding the principle of interconnectivity and doing whatever we can in any way to build bridges and not be separative in any way.
And I agree. And I would also comment that I'm sure that sequence with Mr. Rogers would not have happened by accident.
Right.
That it was deliberate. And that's part of, you know, we have to be very conscious. We have to be very deliberate in presenting the real images, the images of what life is really all about. And it's to me, I just will confess, it's hard. It's hard to not strike out and say, you're wrong, you know, how can you believe that? But I know from experience that aggression just accelerates aggression and accelerates separativeness. And so we have to find ways to create this, it's like an energetic wall that says, no, no further. You cannot come here. This is not okay, without that aggressive fighting back.
Yeah. Well, just 2 points. We have to go to a break in a sec, but you know, you will often talk about bearing witness, Dorothy. Perhaps even for a moment when we come back, you'll just say a bit about that. And, you know, there is so, you know, Fred Rogers went before Congress. They were going to cut money for public television. And he was the one. The judge did not want to give any more money, any more government money. They were going to cut the funding for public television. And it was looking grim. And Fred Rogers went up there and he was the one. He just spoke in a gentle way, a truthful way. He spoke from his heart. And I think it's very interesting that he was really invested in the media and in television as a way to promote goodness, but also to reveal, you know, to shed light and to bear witness, you know. So anyway, Dorothy, we're going to go to a break and we'll be right back.
Powerful your thoughts and beliefs are in determining your experience of your life? Is it really true that simply by changing some of the words you use in your day-to-day language, that you can change your life? I'm Megan Edge. Join me on Playing on the Edge, Radical Change with Ease, with my co-host Dr. Pat on Transformation Talk Radio. I look forward to seeing you there.
To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Hi, I'm Steve Kramer of Spirit Fire Radio, and I believe that meditation changes everything. It leads us in the direction of greater well-being, and that's a fact. I struggled with meditation for years. I understood the principles, but I found it hard to incorporate them into my everyday life. Spirit Fire's meditation practice changed that. It's called the Practice of Living Awareness, and it's taught in 14 steps. These are 14 tools that I can use in any moment, on and off the cushion. Steps like smile, flow, and ground of being support my clarity of mind while I'm navigating the ups and downs of modern life. That's why it's called the Practice of Living Awareness. If you'd like to add meditation to your daily experience, the Practice of Living Awareness is free, online, and it's suited for any level of practitioner. Visit spiritfire.com for more information. And be sure to check out Spirit Fire's meditation retreats in Western Massachusetts. It's all there at spiritfire.com.
Tune in to People Like Us Radio with Megan Lyons, transcending the trauma of the human experience. Megan will be raising the universal consciousness by empowering listeners with their own inner strength, working past trauma and abuse. Megan will show you how to find true healing and inner peace through the art and practice of self-love. Tune in every first and third Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. For more information about Megan and her work, visit enterthelightllc.com.
What is a brilliant culture and how do we create them? Why are they important? Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you align your culture with your business strategy for exceptional results. Looking for a culture that drives organizational excellence? Listen to Cultural Brilliance Radio, the second and fourth Friday of each month at 10 a.m. Pacific and 1 p.m. Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit culturalbrilliance.com.
Would you like your next chapter to be free from fear and angst? Tune in to Your Next Chapter Radio, navigating through life's transitions with Shelley Ryan the fourth Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Shelley's contagious enthusiasm guides you through life's transitions deliberately, mindfully, and funnily. For Your Next Chapter coaching or to listen, visit YourNextChapterCoaching.com or call 602-617-8351. Next!
Well, Welcome back, listeners. Dorothy, just before the break, I had mentioned bearing witness. I find that to be so important, really, as a political stance. So I just wondered if you could, you say it so eloquently, I wondered if you could say a few words about bearing witness.
Well, the reason that this concept is important to me, Steve, is because we do find ourselves sometimes in circumstances where we can't do anything directly about what's happening. We are not able to actually intervene for whatever reason. But it's important to not just turn away. It's important to be present, to acknowledge what has happened. And that's, to me, part of what bearing witness is about. And sometimes it's, I just give you one small example. I was visiting my dear childhood friend in northern India, where I had grown up, and she and her mother had a school that they ran for children who were in the, you know, the lowest caste in India, the outcast children. And they had intentionally provided employment for women who were victims of acid attacks. Now, this has gotten a little bit of news in North America, but this is in India, dowry deaths and acid attacks against women are unfortunately very common, and dowry deaths being burning the bride if the other family doesn't give enough in the way of dowry, and the acid attacks, just throwing acid in the woman's face, which, you know, then eats away the face, and it's impossible to reconstruct the face so that's not visible. So I found myself, you know, spending time at this school, and there are these women, and they are so disfigured, and there's nothing that, I mean, I can't change the fact that that happened to them. What I can do is I can look them in the eye with caring, with respect, with compassion, instead of looking away so that I didn't have to see what had been done to them, which is what most of their experience was during their you know, everyday life, was people looking away.
Yeah, and talk about objectification, you know, that has been forced upon them, you know, in such a physical manner that it is the first thing you see, so that it really does take awareness, and it takes intention, right, to mm-hmm. get beyond that. And mm-hmm. yeah, beautiful. And, you know, that to me is political in a way. Do you know what I mean? It is not political is the wrong word, but it is activism. But mm-hmm. it is participating. It is creating right. change through your actions. So
right.
indeed.
And it's the kind of, you know, it's, I think we need to remember that being politically active happens on many, many levels. It happens on the one-to-one level. I think also, because it was just again in the news of the young people from Parkland who are doing such excellent work on ending gun violence, and they are taking the positive step of registering people to vote, you know, and educating young people, their peers, that the way you change things in a political system is you pay attention to who's running for office and you vote for the people that will take the actions that are positive.
And you participate, you know, once again, this right. idea of participating in, it just brings to mind all of the themes we've touched thus far: interconnectivity, participation, non-linearity, you know, that your one vote can make a huge difference in so many ways, you know, mm-hmm. can change your life, can change so many people's lives, that we've got to participate. We've got to, you know, we've got to be a part of this organized life. This
right
guts.
And so if we talk about, you know, other techniques that we can use for ensuring that we do behave in a non-dualistic way, to me one of the keys, it sounds simplistic, but is remembering who we are. You know, you just listed off some of those characteristics. we are spiritual beings having a human experience, right? We are part of this whole. Everything that we feel and think and do and say affects the whole fabric of life around us. And so we have choices every moment as to whether we're going to be harmful or whether we're going to behave in a harmless manner. And just really holding that awareness that we matter, what we do matters, and we can affect change or we can facilitate the status quo.
Yeah. Getting to know oneself, you know, awareness is very complex, and I feel like remembering who we are in the macro, but really also taking the time to getting to know who we are individually as well, you know, helps so much. Gosh, meditation, I'm always going to promote meditation, but just such a wonderful way to not only get to know the intricacies of our mind, our choices, and but to get to know our place in the world, get to know the world itself. I always think of the word reverence, to generate reverence. We talked about curiosity and appreciation of really going deeper, of engaging with other human beings. It's establishing reverence for them, which is getting to know them beyond the shell of their form, getting to know their qualities and their essence. You know, it makes life interesting at the same time, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the strategies or one of the techniques that to me, especially in a group, can be so powerful is appreciative inquiry. You know, where you have people from different backgrounds, different value systems, and each person speaks their own truth, you know, what matters to them, why it matters, and the others listen, you know, so that we really try to understand the complexity of the human family of what's going on. And that needs to be accompanied then by empathy, which we were talking about just a little bit ago. Where we feel ourselves into the shoes of the other person.
Yeah, it really does. It really is in conscious distinction to dismissiveness. You know, to generate empathy is really to engage and really to connect. Beautiful.
Mm-hmm. One of the things
Well,
you're going to cut me off.
We need to wrap it up. Some final words.
Just one final word. Remember to not be dismissive of ourselves. Remember to listen to our own intuition and to trust ourselves, because we are more likely to trust others if we trust ourselves.
Yes, change yourself, change the world. Beautiful, beautiful slogan. So, Dorothy, it's been a really interesting month talking about non-duality as a universal principle. And we're going to move on in September to interdependence. We're going to take the next week off. We hope everybody has a wonderful Labor Day. We are going to rerun a show about hope. It seems so interesting so apropos to bring forward this idea of hope and positiveness and optimism, as we've been talking quite a bit about what's going on in the world these days. We could all use a little bit of hope. And then, Dorothy, interdependence for September. So I'm looking forward to that. Thank you so much, as always, Dorothy. And thank you, listeners, for joining us. You can find our archives at spiritfireradio.com and with Transformation Talk Radio. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Spirit Fire Radio. Tune in each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern, for your weekly guide to purposeful living and practical spirituality. Join hosts Steve Kramer and Dorothy Riddle as they shine the light on universal spiritual principles and uncover ways that ageless wisdom can guide you in cultivating consciousness in your everyday life. Add to your awareness with Spirit Fire Radio. To learn more, visit spiritfireradio.com.